How to do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, August 27th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good afternoon.
Excellent to have you with us today. Also today with me, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hello. It is good to be here.
Also, for the two of you, we have a discussion of Apple Card, the Apple Card in particular, as its privacy stacks up against other cards. Andrew, you wrote this up for us today, right?
Yeah, so someone over at the Washington Post did this experiment comparing purchases he made with the Apple Card and an Amazon Rewards card. Mm-hmm. I think it was from Chase. And he found that while the Apple Card is private in the sense that Apple and Goldman Sachs don't really collect or sell your data, it still works like any other credit card. Like, your purchases can still be collected by retailers, and banks can still share your info, except for, you know, Goldman Sachs. Mm-hmm. So he also mentions point-of-sale retailers. So there's still a lot of different ways for MasterCard to, despite how they say they anonymize your data, it's still going to be out there.
Right. So, like, one thing I know is that you can't, if you go to point-of-sale places, somebody that lets you pay with Square, Clover, or something like that, you can sort of associate an email address with that credit card. And then when you go to the next place, like, it'll say, do you want me to email it to the address we already have, like, on file as going to this credit card? And you can get your receipts that way. So yeah, there's definitely ways to do it. But how did it stack up? You said it was against an Amazon Rewards card.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it just depends on what you're looking for. If you want those rewards, maybe you'll want to get the Amazon card. If you want to be able to manage your credit and pay in an easy way, then maybe check out the Apple Card. I mean, unlike Apple Pay, when you use the Apple Card, at least the physical one, mm-hmm. it doesn't generate a randomized card number for each transaction. Now, there is a consolation in the iOS wallet app. You can manually change the card number at any time. You just have to go back and update the info from where you entered it at. Like, if you save your credit information.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I think the bigger picture here is important. The credit card industry has been working on tracking our purchases for decades.
Yes.
Well, long before Google and Facebook came along. Of course, Google and Facebook came along and, you know, like, are doing things the credit card companies can only dream of. But that infrastructure is still there. So when you've got a company like Apple working with a bank that will agree to their privacy goals, so to speak, it doesn't eliminate the rest of the credit card industry.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, MasterCard, like, it's Goldman Sachs not tracking and selling your data is great. And really, Apple only has control over, you know, itself and the its banking partner that it got to agree to these terms.
Right.
Apple can't do anything about the rest of the industry, including, you know, the retailers who see our data as part and parcel of their operating procedures, especially the big retailers. You know, Target's been doing this for a very long time, for instance. And and then, of course, again, you know, MasterCard and Visa and Discover and American Express have been doing these sorts of tracking things for a very, very, very long time.
Yes.
So the Apple Card doesn't like magically make your credit card transactions private, mm-hmm. but it does make things slightly more private.
Right.
Yeah. And slightly more private than you can get anywhere else. And that's important, I think. You know, it's you know, Tim Cook, what did Tim Cook say? Many times he said that he thought that the privacy would become a competitive advantage at some point.
Yeah.
You know, basically that there would come a point where consumers like woke up to the importance of their own privacy. And then when that happened, that Apple, you know, would be there with all of its policies and procedures and practices. And when that happened, that Apple would be finally in a good place. Well, this is another little incremental thing that Apple can do. And for those who care about this, and again, that is still probably a subset of folks, it is an improvement.
Absolutely. And what I hope is that the Apple Card is very popular and that lots of people like it and that lots of people talk about it. And that one of the things people talk about really enjoying about the card is the privacy piece of it. I know a little bit more about what's happening to my data, and it's a little bit better than I'm getting from any other credit card company. And maybe that's a thing that will cause others to have to compete on that front as well. And maybe some of the other companies will have to adjust some of those things. That's my hope. I'm an optimist.
That's my hope too. And Apple needs to do a better job, in my opinion, of promoting and advertising and educating consumers on this. I was like just talking to someone a couple of days ago about I was playing an online game, and my alliance was in the alliance chat in the game. Someone was asking about Face ID and Touch ID, and I was explaining how they work, how these things your facial data and your fingerprints are stored on the secure enclave on your iPhone, and this information is never transmitted to Apple. Mm-hmm. Right. And that it's encrypted on your device. Apple can't even read it. And there was someone in the room saying, well, there's I guarantee you they're storing it somewhere. It's like, well, let's no. Well,
yes. On your phone where Apple can't touch it. That's the point.
Well, yeah, it's somewhere remote is what he said, yeah. Actually. And this person was absolutely cocksure of their opinion on this, and that of course Apple was storing your facial data and your fingerprint data somewhere on its servers, and he's just wrong, but that's like on Apple for anyone not knowing. Mm-hmm. And so Apple, in my opinion, should definitely be doing a better job of promoting all of the things and educating folks on all of the things and where they're offering better privacy. And explaining how it works so that more people know.
Absolutely. And, you know, they did that one commercial about security, like security, and you should have it and it's good. But they haven't done a whole lot outside of what they point out during media events when they roll out new stuff that has, you know, that may contain some sort of user data. Here's what we're going to do with it. Here's all the parts we don't know, and we're really excited to tell you about all these things that you can do with your phone that we don't know anything about. And not talking about it, because like you, recently, I had a conversation with somebody where I paid for something with my watch, and the person behind the register said something about like I could never carry around my credit card number on my phone like that. And I'm like, well, you're not. It's actually safer because nobody can see my credit card number. And the card number they use changes every time. So it's tied to my credit card, but you can't, you know, and because remember, at one point, anyway, I wrote an article about breach fatigue and how Apple Pay was going to get around that because of all these things that make Apple Pay work the way it does that are awesome. And it's a thing that's sort of frustrating to me, like you know, this absolute belief that basically what you're carrying around with Apple Pay is just a picture of your credit card or something. And that's not the case at all. So I too wish that Apple was doing a better job of putting the security stuff out there. We've seen one of the advertisements this summer that came out, even before iOS 13, I'm assuming it's going to make a comeback in September, October, of the enhanced accessibility features that are coming in the new version of iOS. And I'm hopeful that maybe we'll get more security, more on the security front in that same sort of way. You know, these nicely produced little 30-second spots that show, like, this is what we're doing and this is how it's good for you. And that would be awesome.
Like, imagine please go ahead, Andrew.
I think Apple does have a lot of security information available, but just like with privacy policies in terms of service, people just don't read them.
Right.
So I think the only way you're going to get some people to know what is actually going on is to try to cram all this information into a 30-second ad.
Yeah.
Or maybe more if it's on YouTube.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I know the stuff is out there for people to go dig into, but nobody's digging into it. You have to take it to them and go, look how this is awesome, and you should do that. Yeah.
Well, what if there was, like, a privacy button on, like, all the features? Like, for instance, there's a privacy button on your Apple Card, and when you were to tap that privacy, you just little P, you know, just like a little I, but like a little P, and it would explain in plain language how privacy works for the Apple Card, or for sign in with Apple, or for the App Store purchases, or
that would
for
be amazing.
Siri, right? That would be a fantastic thing, and it would really, like, raise the bar on everybody who's not doing that.
Mm-hmm. I like that very much.
iOS does do that to an extent in a lot of its services. There's this little text that says about name of service and privacy. Like, for example, about Ask Siri and privacy, maybe they could just do more about making it more plain language.
Yeah. But
there is some information like that.
Yeah, the plain language, I think. I would extend that almost to be something that you would see within an app itself, if your apps are holding any of your data, under help, like, you would have help and you would have privacy and you would have about or whatever, you know, like, help is a pretty standard feature in most mobile apps. And I would like to see privacy either be under help or its own little section, just of, you know, a plain language version of it. And if you want to go read the actual in-depth full on, you know, legal boilerplate or whatever, you can, you know, hit a link and go see that. But in the short term, like, here's what you need to know. You know, any data you give us stays on your device. We never see it. We don't have a server that stores anything, so you don't have to worry. Or, you know, whatever else. Like, it would be nice to just have, like, a couple sentence little thing that pops up, you know, that you could see. Brian, I really like your privacy button idea.
Thank you.
I look forward to the editorial where you talk about it in detail.
we see the iButton in lots of places.
Yeah.
Like, let's get a little P button.
Yeah. I'm for this plan. This is a good plan. I like it a lot. So I think that would be a really good addition. And I think it would just, much like, you know, we've seen with some of the stuff they're doing with accessibility in iOS 13, I think it would be really nice if privacy got that same sort of spotlight and just became part of the conversation on a larger scale. Like, Apple has turned it into part of the conversation at media events, and I'd like to see it the rest of the time. That would be really great. You know what else is really great, I will tell you, is our sponsor this week. Our sponsor this week is OmniFocus. OmniFocus is a professional level to-do manager that helps you, as its tagline says, accomplish more every day. OmniFocus is available on macOS, and it's also a universal iOS app with an Apple Watch complication. From that complication, you can view, add, or check off tasks right on your wrist. OmniFocus will remember everything for you, and it will help you get everything done because it will give you reminders based on all sorts of criteria like date and time and location and lots more. If you're a GTD person, or if you aspire, like I do, to be a GTD person, OmniFocus can be your trusted system because you can enter all of your tasks anywhere you are. This actually now includes, as of June, This includes OmniFocus for the web. So if you're one of those people who has a Mac at home and a PC at work, but you can't track any of your work stuff because you have a PC, you don't have to worry about that anymore. You can just go use the web page and do all of the viewing and updating right there in a web browser. You can even upgrade to the pro version and get more customization, including slicing and dicing what those future views look like, and AppleScript functionality, and lots more. You can get a free 2-week trial of OmniFocus over at OmniFocus.com. And we'd like to thank OmniFocus for sponsoring the show today. Our second topic today is the App Store. Interestingly enough, as we talk about the P button, the App Store, we've seen some reports about what it takes to crack those top 10 app charts over on the App Store. And Andrew, you wrote this up.
Yeah. So there was data from Sensor Tower. They found that in the past couple of years, it's been a bit easier for non-game apps to achieve top ranking in the App Store. So the number of downloads required for this to happen dropped 34% in 2018, but it did go back a little bit up in last year or this year.
Okay.
So, and then so basically they're finding that it's easier to get the top ranking, but certain app categories are becoming saturated with all of the most popular apps. So in a way, it's harder to break into a niche or into a certain category, mm-hmm. but it's still a bit easier for to get in that top ranking.
Okay.
But is it easier? I mean, if fewer people are downloading apps, it's not easier. It's just, it takes, I mean, you still have to have more downloads than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're still fighting for that percentage.
Right.
Oh, right. This is right? Looking at it as a whole. Like I said, the number of data, the median number, that's the type of data we're seeing. So the median number, the average, has dropped, but on the individual level, yeah, it's still a bit hard to break into that.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but again, it's because people are downloading fewer of those apps. So you still have to fight just as hard to get the time and attention from folks. You still have to fight just as hard for each of those downloads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you're essentially you're fighting. I mean, I'm quibbling as a true pedant. I'm quibbling over the use of the word easier. I mean, the numbers are smaller. I get that, but I don't think it's necessarily easier. And I would imagine the developers hearing that would go, "What?"
that's probably true. Yeah,
it ain't easy out here.
But what we can say is that in certain situations, it doesn't take as many downloads. That doesn't mean it's easier, because if people aren't downloading as many apps, then, you know, the percentage, you know, doesn't really work out. But
because it's all relative.
Right. But I did think it was interesting in that people are downloading fewer apps, because I thought that was also sort of an interesting metric to come out of this.
Yeah, it is interesting. And this stuff has always flowed back and forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, at one point, novelty apps were like the bee's knees.
Yes.
And, you know, productivity apps might go up or down in popularity. Games are going to go up and down in popularity. And, of course, Apple's going to be sort of changing that metric, too, once Arcade is released.
Right.
It's going to be interesting to see how that affects rankings.
Do we have a date on Apple Arcade? I don't think we do.
Nope.
I'm just assuming it's going to be like once you have iOS 13, then you'll have the opportunity.
It's probably going to be a fall thing.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to me because, and this is where we lose Andrew for the rest of the show. It has been announced that Nintendo is releasing Mario Kart Tour on iOS on September 25th. So, and we're going to lose Andrew because he's just going to be off like mentally playing Mario Kart on his phone.
And Charlotte too. I think Charlotte's all excited about it.
Oh, she is. She can tell as we record. She just looked up and went, "Nintendo, what? I'm not sure why." It's going to be very... I'm excited about it. I'm looking forward to playing Mario Kart. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. But one of the other, like the flip side of this, Andrew, when you were looking at the metrics, was that it's harder for games to get into the charts because those numbers have gone up.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I thought was an interesting piece as well.
And when it comes to non-apps, in the top 10 categories, they say photo and video apps is the hardest to break into, mm-hmm. because you have all these popular apps like YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat. Mm-hmm. They have the most downloads.
Sure. And that's half a chart right there. Like that's, you know, 5 out of 10 spaces that are probably never going to change. So you're not competing to be in the mm-hmm. top 10. You're competing to be in the top 5 that aren't the ones that everybody knows about.
It's true. You know, Apple's been trying to battle the tyranny of the charts, mm-hmm. but it's a hard battle. It's you know, people like to download popular things.
Yeah,
and when you're looking at a big, you know, you're trying to find some new app that does some particular thing that you want to do, it's really hard to pick, and it's super easy to go, well, this one's popular, it must be good. Mm-hmm. And you know, and in most cases they are good, but there are also good apps that never get any kind of spotlight shined on them.
Yes.
And it's like I say, I you know, it's the tyranny of the pop charts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a little disappointing with that, you know, because again, this comes back to discoverability. Like we've talked about this before about the App Store. With so many apps in it, it's really hard sometimes to find something that's new and interesting. One thing that Apple has been doing with the, you know, today in the App Store kind of stuff, since they sort of redid that on iOS, is like games we love this week, or apps we love this week, or games we're playing today, to spotlight some different things. And I've tapped through on a few of those here and there, and there's almost always at least 2 or 3 that I had no idea existed and would never have known about if I hadn't seen them in the App Store. I've downloaded some, but mostly it's just been kind of nice to see that they are at least trying to shine some light on some of these other ones that aren't, you know, holding those permanent spots in the top 10. So it's kind of fun to check those out. So sometimes those are actually kind of interesting to see. When you go look at the little stories on the App Store, you can sometimes find something that's a little interesting or a little different because Apple's drawn attention to it without having to use the charts for that. So I think that's one of the ways they're mm-hmm. trying to combat that.
Hey, can I ask a sort of side rail question?
Yeah.
Do either of you download a quote unquote free to play game, which means that it's set up and designed to artificially be limiting unless you purchase in-app mm-hmm. Boosts or other kinds of purchases, right? Mm-hmm. Do either of you like deliberately just like see just how far you can go without spending a dime? Like making a personal point of like, yeah, I'm gonna finish this game and I'm not gonna spend a dime and I don't care. Is that just me?
I've never given a cent to Candy Crush. Not one.
I'm pretty much against microtransactions, so if I have a cool game, I won't spend anything on it.
There are games that I will spend, I will routinely, any game that I like that offers, that's ad supported and offers me a way to pay for ads to be off, mm-hmm. I will happily do that to give money directly to the developer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Generally, things that stick around, something that I actually am interested in playing, I will buy something out of it at some point to support the game. Like Wizards Unite, I know it's not like they're indie developers or anything, but I've spent a little bit of money in Wizards Unite to expand my bag of holding or whatever you call it. And I've done like I've removed ads from different stuff that I've used and liked. But I also will not pay. And if it's one of those, you know, if you buy extra lives now, you can keep playing or whatever. I like never do that.
Yeah, and I have played, I definitely have played a couple of the free-to-play MMOs, but the when it comes to the vast majority of games that have in-game packs, mm-hmm. and the game is designed to be incredibly artificially limiting without buying those packs, I just, out of protest.
Yeah.
I work as hard as I can to play without buying the packs and see how far I can go. Anyway, sorry for the side rail.
No, that's a good question. Because that's another thing to consider. That's honestly, to side rail your side rail, one of my fundamental complaints about the App Store is that there are apps that basically don't work without a subscription or some sort of payment. And I feel like those apps should have some sort of marker besides in-app purchase. Like, if you aren't going to get anything out of this app beyond the free trial, unless you pay, I should know that up front. And I don't like when apps are that way. Like, I wish there were a better way to point that out, because that doesn't mean I won't pay, but I just want to know ahead of time, like, this app will essentially be a doorstop in a week, because we only have a 7-day trial, and unless you pay, you get nothing, you know, as opposed to some apps where like certain parts of it are free, but there's more if you unlock it, like things that are still useful, even if you're not paying for a subscription or, you know, paying to unlock something. And I wish that there were a more obvious way to point that out.
Yeah.
Mostly because I get mad about it. And I like, and like I said, in some cases I will pay, but I want to know ahead of time. That's the relationship you want with me, is that, yeah, you're going to pay or nothing. You know, I wish there were a better way to do that. If you have a suggestion for how that should work, you can email it to us at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter, or you can leave a comment in the show notes. And I think that's going to do it for us today. So, Andrew, thanks so much for coming by, talking to us about your stories.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Brian, I look forward to your privacy button editorial, and thank you for being here today.
Oh, yeah. Good to be here. Thanks for having us.
And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.